I'm Craig Collins, and this is You've Been Challenged on WGN Plus. Thank you for joining me this week. I have two great guests, Rachel Woodall, the lovely and talented producer at WGN, who actually also hosts a WGN Plus podcast, a very cool podcast, might I say. It's called Artistic License, and even just the concept of the podcast is really beautiful, that you can find art in a lot of different things. I think she went karate fighting. She's done a bunch of different stuff, and it's a very cool podcast. She actually also brought along her brother, Ben, who seems to be a genius. I'm not really sure exactly what he's studying, but it's something about, like, the planet and time travel. I asked him time travel questions, and he answered them beautifully. However, you're not going to be able to hear any of that audio, that beginning kind of segment, because it got deleted. And in order to explain what happened to the audio, I need to introduce you to someone here at WGN Plus and my You've Been Challenged podcast. Now, I don't know very many celebrities. I don't have celebrity friends. I do, however, cross circles with those people through some of their relatives. So I know some celebrity relatives. One celebrity relative I've gotten to know pretty well is Craig Walken. That is Christopher Walken's second cousin, who comes around the podcast. He actually used to jump on the Brian Noonan show when I would fill in producing on that show every once in a while. And he's here now to explain what happened. Hey, Craig, how are you doing today? I can't believe I'm on the show. Finally, it happened. I'm here. No, Craig, I know you're not a guest, though. I could be. We could talk about anything. Chris's career, maybe. Craig, I just have a simple question for you, and I apologize. That's all the time I'm going to be able to give you. What happened to the audio, the Rachel Woodall podcast audio? Okay, you know, you give it to me at the end, and I listen because I love your show so much. I just listen again and again and again and again. I listen. Okay, Craig, get to the speed up this story. Well, so I listened too many times, and I think I broke it. And when I broke it, the beginning disappeared. It just was gone. Are you sure you didn't forget to hit record when we were in studio doing the recording? No, I would never make a rookie mistake like that. Neither would I. Neither would Craig Collins. Craig Collins and Craig Walken would both not make that type of rookie mistake. Well, good. Both of us wouldn't do it. Anyway, this is the You've Been Challenged podcast with Rachel Woodall and her genius brother, Ben. We apologize that the beginning of the audio is missing because of Craig Walken. Yes, I'm a real person. Craig, stop. Craig Walken messed everything up. Craig Collins did not. But we are going to jump in with Rachel explaining how she binge-watched the show after the intro.
I binge-watched the entire first and second season in like 2 days, which I'd never done before.
Sure.
And I watched it live from the third season on, but I don't know what I like. It just feels more familiar, and I agree. I think Michael goes too overboard, but it bothered me when Andy turned into Michael.
Yeah.
After Michael left.
Yeah, that was really weird.
In the last season, they made all that weird like Jim and Pam drama, like, oh, is she going to cheat on him with the sound boom guy?
And right, because at some point Pam has to go away to school, and then they're sort of separated for an amount of time. There are all these moments in this show where they're like, you know, we obviously notice now that Jim and Pam are not quite as interesting when they're together and happy.
Yeah.
So let's make it at least a little, let's give a love interest to Jim that obviously is someone that really wants to help Jim cheat on Pam and see if Jim will do it. But in reality, that couple from the first or the second season, even the first season on, I don't think there's any way that they would ever have, and obviously they didn't, but there's any way that that relationship ever would have folded.
Yeah.
Once they got together, the show should have just realized, like, we made this beautiful little couple here. Mm-hmm. They need to stay together forever now. And if they're not the center of attention anymore, that's okay.
But then I really liked Andy and Aaron together.
Yeah.
And then they never, like, they didn't end up together. Spoiler
no.
alert, I guess.
Spoilers are okay in this podcast.
It made
they're
me
totally
really
acceptable.
Sad. Like, they were perfect, and it was a better, like, off and on thing. And then stupid, what, Plop? Was
Plop?
Yeah. He comes in and ruins it all. And then she doesn't even end up with him. Like, I thought the ending of the series was exquisite, but I did not like the Andy and Aaron.
Really? So you do like the last episode, though? You like kind of the way that it all caps itself off?
I liked it. I really... I guess maybe.
Do you like Michael's relationship that he winds up in toward the end of the show?
Oh, with Holly?
Yeah, with Holly.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that one's pretty nice. Yeah, Holly's pretty great, I think.
I forgot about Holly.
No, don't forget about Holly.
Because I was thinking on the way here, I was like, I think I really like Michael and Jan. Because they're so dysfunctionally perfect. Like, we were trying to decide what to watch yesterday, and I was like, we should watch Dinner Party.
It's a good episode. Yeah.
One of the
intense. Jan in that episode is so good at being just the weirdest. Their relationship, for that episode specifically, because what happens for anyone that hasn't seen it is Michael and Jan invite people over to their dinner party, and everyone gets to kind of see an inside look at a relationship that they all knew was probably not great, and it just seems insane. And
it's
the way that everyone does that episode specifically, it's so well acted. Michael Scott is such a strong character, I think, probably because of the actor who plays Michael Scott. But all those moments, the way that he's able to be crazy sometimes and the way that actually I feel for him at other times, it's a really interesting thing that even Ricky Gervais wasn't able to do on the UK Office. You never liked his version of the boss, but I think at times you definitely do like Michael Scott, even though he seems to be like a racist a little bit. He seems to be sexist.
A lot of it.
He seems to be a lot of those things. You still inevitably sort of like the guy, I think, which is really a testament to how well that character is portrayed, even in that episode when he's doing horrible stuff in his relationship.
Or we watched Gay Witch Hunt yesterday,
too.
Like, when he's being so homophobic, but somehow it's endearing.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
That takes skill.
Yeah.
I think he kind of, we empathize with him because we've all had an experience where we've, like, used a word wrong in public and someone called us out on it. And that's kind of the essence of Michael.
No, it's funny you say that, actually, because I'm a little sensitive to that on my podcast or just in general in my own life. My friends have created a drinking game to this podcast. They like to listen. And in college, we were all really big fans of the Power Hour. I don't know if you guys know what the Power Hour is.
Is that where you do a shot of beer every minute?
Yeah. If our mom's listening, I'm totally not.
I've never heard of a Power Hour.
I did the Office Power Hour.
Did you? Is there an Office Power Hour?
Yeah, I made it like 5 minutes, though, and I was like, I'm done. I just want to watch it.
Right. And by the way, it has to be a shot of beer, because anyone who tells you it's a shot of anything else is insane.
It's trying to kill you.
Yeah, right. Because there is 60 of those within an hour. But so they listen to my podcast, and instead of it being, you know, a certain time amount, there's specific things that I guess I do that forces them to drink. And as they tell me these, as they share these things with me, I become very aware of them. And sort of like in, if you've both seen How I Met Your Mother, when they find out that there's a drinking game for her TV show, the reporter on the show, Robin, she starts to just steer into it. And I haven't done that yet, but I might steer into it because I'll probably be with the guys when they listen to it again. And I'm going to get them all really drunk.
I was going to say, tell me what to do, and I'll get them real wasted.
So there's a few. There's one thing that apparently I do at least once every podcast, and this is one that offends me. I will say something like, I will say a point, and then you'll say a point back, and I will eventually just devolve into a couple sentences that make no sense. And my guest never calls me on it. They always pretend that I just made sense. And so I don't even, because I listen back and I'm like, I think this makes sense, but I guess I'm missing a sentence. And so everyone says like, oh, this is a time to drink. And now I'm really worried about that. Like making absolutely no sense and rambling. They're drinking right now. I know that they're drinking at this moment.
I'm worried that I'm not going to catch it.
Right. No, you got to, because I make no sense sometimes. I do. I jump around in my thoughts and I'll say three things at once. And then eventually there's sort of a question. And the guest is just like, okay, lovely. So that is one of the things that forces my friends to drink.
I think if you're going to steer into it, you should use like an appropriate show, like steer it into it. I'm like Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that absolutely makes sense.
I don't know, like if we want to talk about Meredith or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
No, you're right.
Or the time, there's one episode where Michael wants to throw a really good Christmas party and he goes and he buys like 18
Benihana Christmas
candles. Is that the one where he buys like 18 handles of vodka? And then he's like, is this enough to get 12 people drunk? And the liquor store guy's like,
Yeah, that is enough. No, I think that's a different Christmas
episode. I think it's earlier than Benihana Christmas.
Yeah. Benihana Christmas, by the way, is another one of my favorite episodes of the show, just because of the way that Michael hits on the waitresses.
And he has to put an X on.
Yeah, because he can't tell them apart.
How is that so endearing? Like someone being so racist.
Right. Like that's horrible, by the way. If we saw that in public, if your boss did that at a party, Jimmy DeCastro would never do this, though. But if someone did that, we would think this was the worst person that existed.
If he marked an Asian woman who looks nothing like her friend.
Exactly correct. Yeah. And I hope my friends are drinking for that now as well. Also, just to finish the drinking game, apparently I have a problem with sarcasm. I really enjoy sarcasm. And I guess I do it on a high level to the point where I sound like an idiot, which there's a T-shirt that says my sarcasm is so high that I actually sound like a moron more often than not, which I need to get. But so they tell me that when I do that, too, when I answer or do something super sarcastic that no one in the room notices is sarcasm, they have to drink. So they should
pick words or something that you say, too.
That would be much easier.
Every
you're right.
Every time you say podcast.
Podcast. You're right. No. Or every time I just say you've binge challenged. That would be an easier. My friends are just weird people, though. They need something that is a lot more to offend me more.
Their rules are so subjective.
I know. Yeah. I'm aware of that. And actually, toward the end of the podcast, when they're all doing several sips, I don't think any of the rules are being followed anymore. I think that we're all just getting drunk.
Right.
Yeah, this is a weird free time period. But anyway, outside of my drinking game podcast thing that I'm talking about. Oh, that was a sentence that didn't make sense, I think. Anyway.
Everybody drink.
Chug. Right. Chug. Back waterfall.
Back to the actual topic at hand, The Office. The Jim and Pam relationship is one that I think we have to talk about in detail because that is the essence of the show for the first couple seasons. The fact that the show, and we haven't done this yet, is sort of describe how it's shot for anyone that would listen to a podcast and never have seen the show. And I don't know that I have anyone that would do that. But if you are, if you are a human being that just clicked the Office challenge and you've never even heard of what it is.
What's wrong with you?
Please go watch it.
One of the coolest dynamics is that it's a documentary. The idea is that the show and the reason there's cameras and everything is because this is a documentary being shot in a workplace. And the people doing confessionals is where I think we get the most touching understanding of how Jim and Pam feel about each other without them actually being able to be together. I think that dynamic makes their romantic relationship more impactful than a lot of other shows. Because you usually don't get that unless the character is off talking to someone else, if they have a confidant or something, which is why in rom-coms there's always a buddy. You always have a buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Each relationship always has their friend that's like, I'm going to talk about this person that I care about to you all the time, and you're going to probably hate me for it. But in The Office, you get to just do it with a cameraman in a box by yourself.
Yeah. Well, they did that on Modern Family, too, but it's explained why, so it's kind of weird.
Yeah. You're right. Yeah, see, exactly. Yeah, that the confessional has to make sense, and I don't know. But to me, that obviously makes Jim and Pam slowly, and the fact that Pam has a relationship that she's in, there's a lot of things they did really well to make that take as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Was 3 seasons enough, or do you think that relationship should have taken the entire show?
I feel like that would have been dragging. Even though they become like kind of boring parents and stuff, it's okay because there's like Kelly and Ryan, if you really want some drama.
That's true.
There's Dwight and Angela that I think actually might be my favorite.
Dwight is, Dwight just in general does a lot. I think Dwight and Jim is one of my favorite relationships on the show too, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I really wish they had had a bromance at some point.
I think they did. I think they had a low-key bromance where neither one would admit it, but they missed each other.
What was your favorite Jim prank?
Oh.
If you had to pick a favorite Jim prank.
Oh, my gosh. There's so many.
I think it has to be when he dresses as Dwight, when he becomes Dwight, when he comes into the office and Jim is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That one to me is really funny.
That's classic.
Yeah.
I really like the Jell-O, just because I've replicated that prank in real life.
What?
My physics professor, we always do stuff to like his dry erase markers just to mess with him at the beginning of class, and then one time we put them in Jell-O.
That is awesome. Yeah. How did he take that?
He loves it.
Okay. What was cleanup like? Because the one thing you don't see in the show is cleanup for any of these pranks. What was that like?
Well, I had a marker that wasn't in Jell-O in my pocket, so I just like tossed it to him, and all the Jell-Os were in a Ziploc bag, or all the markers were in a Ziploc bag.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah, I know, that was very.
We didn't want to ruin anything. That's our line, is don't ruin anything, don't actually harm the teacher.
Right, just make it as funny as possible.
And then everyone has a good time.
Okay, I think the most impressive prank was when he made a fake replica of Dwight's desk out of wrapping paper.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, everything on it. But I also loved Asian Jim.
Asian Jim.
Oh, yeah.
That is a good point.
Apparently, I'm talking about Asians a lot on this podcast.
Yeah, I don't know what you're into, Rach. It's totally fine. I mean, it's, you know.
That actor who's, like, on Fresh Off the Boat and was in that movie,
the interview
and stuff. The thing I recognized him from when he walked in the interview, I was like, oh, it's Asian Jim. Wow, Dwight, you don't see color. I'm really impressed.
So there's an interesting thing that pops up every once in a while with shows like this where something like that kind of happens. Another one that's interesting is Friends and how much money Chandler spent to support Joey throughout the series. There is a calculation of how much money Jim potentially spent on all the pranks he did throughout the entire series.
Ooh.
And it's a substantial amount of money.
How much?
The cost of all of Jim's pranks, and this would be just office pranks that you did to your sort of friend, $5,590.95. And some of the stuff that they can't quantify, because that sounds a little lower than you expect,
yeah,
is things where there's no real way to like buy something like that. Like you said, like creating the whole desk out of wrapping paper. Obviously, you buy the paper, but how do you do all that?
That was so impressive. Or like when he trained Dwight to like want a mint whenever he rebooted his computer. If I hear about that experiment,
right,
like
Pavlov's
I think
dog.
Of The Office.
Yeah, no, that is amazing. So I, you know, just even that idea that you would be able to, oh, you know what? I might have misquoted. I actually didn't roll all the way down to BuzzFeed. It says their guess is $7,000 to $10,000 total.
Oh.
Yeah, so even more. That's actually double by the end of the series.
Really?
Would you spend that much money to prank a coworker?
I mean,
no one in real life would do that. Yeah, exactly. Which
I
is
mean,
why
over
this...
the course of 9 years, that's like.
It's not so bad.
That's still
yeah.
too
yeah.
much.
$1,000 a year on pranking your coworker.
I would spend like $10.
Your brother sounds like he does some terrible things to his teacher and stuff. I feel like you have that in you now. Yeah.
It's he loves it. It's mutual. He's pranked us before.
You haven't spent $1,000 yet?
I think I've spent maybe like $1.50 on
that's
Jello.
Good.
See,
good.
That's my limit.
Economical. Yeah. That's very intelligent of you. Mm-hmm. So I have to ask this as another guy. When you watch this show, did you sort of want to be Jim? Is that a person that you kind of wanted to be? I wanted to be Jim. No? Are you happy? Are you happy enough with yourself that you don't want to be the characters on TV? Is that what you're telling me?
I guess.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, I am too.
I don't.
Totally, so am I.
I wanted to marry Jim.
You wanted to marry Jim. Did you want to be Pam, or did you just wanted to marry Jim?
Pam is like... I know Pam is like really sweet and stuff, but she's just like boring.
Yeah, she's not enough. I didn't really love Pam.
Holly is great.
I like Holly.
Because Holly's such a good foil for Michael, and they're so goofy and fun. Like, I guess I would want a relationship more like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, there's those moments, actually, where, you know, we've gotten to know Michael Scott so well. We've gotten to know Michael Scott so well in this show that you think that there probably isn't really a match out there for him. And when you first meet Holly and some of the ways that she interacts with other people, like a normal person, you think, okay, like, she's not actually going to like Michael. But then when they're alone, I think they go to a... picnic. They go to a company like picnic.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way that they even interact in planning their little horrible sketch that they do, those things make you feel so much for that relationship and think like, well, they really are perfect together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another one. Then they do that pretty well, actually. The relationships that they incorporate throughout the show that don't become as much of a focus like Jim and Pam did still wind up being pretty good pairings. So I guess they did that very, very well in the show.
Yeah, I think... Pam's defining feature in the early seasons is she's kind of a good audience for like Jim's what's the word?
Pranks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was getting shenanigans.
Shenanigans. No,
say.
Shenanigans is a good word. Yeah. It's a good word. Drink shenanigans. No, go ahead.
That was the end of my point.
You're
like,
right. Actually,
they flesh her out as a character more later. But
they're cute. Like,
yeah.
Their wedding is one of my favorite pairs of episodes.
Really?
I really like, also because Andy rips his scrotum, which is just like doing the splits. Like,
are you allowed to say that word?
Yeah, you are. You can say scrotum.
Drink, scrotum.
Drink to scrotum.
Yeah. I want to say scrotum too, scrotum.
Wow, okay. Hi, Mom.
Does she listen to your podcast? Is Mom?
Oh, yeah.
I hope she plays the drinking game then. Mom. Good. I will send you a list of all the rules, and hopefully you guys and Mom play the drinking game later.
She'll drink some, like, Diet Dr. Pepper.
Oh, nice. Wow. Getting crazy with that.
Diet Ginger Ale.
Yeah.
What was I saying? Oh, I really love their wedding because I liked how they let Michael and, like, all the office have their shenanigans, and then they secretly got married on the boat.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah, no, that was really, yeah.
I like them, but they're just not the most interesting part of the
show. No, not as the show progresses. Actually, it's interesting that you mention it that way, too. There's something about that kind of secret wedding, because you create these wedding episodes. They actually also did this in How I Met Your Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much buildup to that episode that I remember thinking it wasn't going to be a very good episode, because you're marrying them on air. Mm-hmm. But then when you actually do that kind of side moment and the audience feels like they're part of something much more intimate, for whatever reason, that resonates so much more with us. So I also really like that aspect of that show. Yeah, and How I Met Your Mother, how they did the same thing. They actually go off and get married in, like, the bushes first with their just the group
Marshall
of friends.
And Lily.
Marshall and Lily.
Yeah, yeah.
Before
they
then progress back into the church and do the wedding that nobody actually really cares about at that point. So
yes.
Not the relationship that made me the most upset in the whole show, the Barney and Robin wedding, that whole lead up to that.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
No,
oh, yeah.
No, I'm so mad about that.
I didn't like them.
This will devolve into a whole different conversation if we talk about Barney, because I had Jeff Carlin, Rose producer, do the How I Met Your Mother show, and the only thing I talked about was Barney. I couldn't talk about anything else. There's a lot more that happens on that show. Mm. It's actually titled How I Met Your Mother, about a different character, but yet Barney to me is the most. Yeah, there's a lot of things to talk about there.
We could also devolve if we started talking about Rory's relationships.
So. Oh, my God, Rory. Which one are you? Which one do you prefer?
Jess in the later seasons.
Okay, Jess. Well, when he comes back,
bookstore
he seems...
Jess.
Yeah, bookstore Jess is a nicer guy. He's
so
now
dreamy.
Right. He's part of like this... Oh, and he's an artistic like little collective thing that he's doing too. So that's your thing, Rachel.
He's,
yeah, that makes sense.
Perfect. Right. So anyway, The Office. Actually, I have one more question about another show, but I feel like it connects because every time I'm watching a new show that's on, I gauge like, oh, is this as good as The Office?
Yeah.
Have you seen Superstore?
No.
Office level.
Really?
It's so funny. And the thing is, like, my friend Jessica and I were watching and we were like comparing. We're like, oh, that's the Michael Scott. And oh, Mateo's like the Kelly Kapoor. And like, it's really good. It's a great workplace comedy.
So something about that show, they actually have Ben Feldman or something. I forget what his
Ben
name
Feldman.
Is exactly. Feldman. Thank you. And he was amazing on Mad Men. So I'm really excited that he now has a show. But he's just a comedy, like kind of a nice guy. Right.
Yeah. He's kind of like the dork that everybody like. I'm not pointing to you. I'm sorry. No. That everybody pokes fun at. It looked like
it's kind of like the dork we all make fun of over here. Wow, you brought your brother. This guy.
America
Ferrera really
is good too, but that I think the thing about The Office is that it's such a good ensemble cast, especially by the end.
Yeah, you're right.
So you can jump into the show and think it's funny from anywhere, but if you've seen it from the beginning, you appreciate it so much more.
Yeah, no, there's something about that too. I compared Friends to Seinfeld on this podcast at one point. I actually haven't done either show independent, but I compared the two. And one thing that I think made Friends a better show than Seinfeld, which is a crazy sentence. Not a lot of people agree with me.
I do.
Great. Yeah, no. Well, and I've been told it's kind of an age thing, too, that if you grew up on one and not the other,
true.
Whatever. I don't
care
about that.
Like the same time?
Kind of, yeah. Seinfeld came on in 90 and like Friends was on by 94. So they really ran concurrent for a lot of their seasons. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I think was more intriguing about the way that Friends or The Office or any of these shows kind of do continuity is that the relationships is what matters so much. And that's the one thing that Seinfeld steered away from. The characters are all like assholes. So I can say that on my podcast. They're all not nice people. So you don't really care as much about the relationships they're having with The Office, with Friends, with a lot of these kind of romantic comedy shows, which is really what I think The Office is. It's a lot about the romance of the relationships. And then also the parkour introduction is hilarious.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Parkour. Yeah. So like to me that's what makes shows like this so much more intriguing is the way that they throughout kind of develop these soap opera relationships while also just creating hilarious moments again and again and again. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's, you know, because Seinfeld certainly was funny, but shows like this seem to connect more with people because you can look at it on different levels. It doesn't just have to be comedy or this or that.
Yeah.
You actually feel more for it. Yeah.
And what about, like, that whole Oscar and Angela thing? Like, they made it so, like, in the end, they're like, we just watched the promos episode where they finally get to see what has been filmed.
Nice.
Which was a great wrap-up. I really liked how they did a lot of the wrap-up at the end. But so, like, because Oscar is sleeping with Angela's husband, who's gay. And
yeah, a little bit,
they
yeah.
have to, like, call him together. And I don't know, I like how their friendship developed because they had so much tension throughout the entire series. And then by the end, even though this like actually horrible thing happened, that you'd think they'd both be really sad and torn apart, like they grow closer and he like helps her out and they...
Right, no.
And she ends up with Dwight and like it's perfect.
That is perfect because we haven't talked much about Dwight actually.
Dwight?
So yeah, no, go ahead. Either of you tell me what you like or dislike about the Dwight character.
Dwight?
I think Dwight is interesting because he is kind of like an archetype that was emerging at the time.
No, that's a good point.
So it's like everyone knows someone like that, but it's like it's kind of a new like thing where someone's like a nerd, but also kind of like skeevy and overly macho and strange.
Overly macho in very odd ways. I don't think a lot of people would even consider that macho except for Dwight.
At least attempting to be overly
you're
macho.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no. Yeah. No, you're right. It's that might be one of the biggest social commentaries that The Office gets credit for is sort of creating that personality type that maybe we do now see a little bit, or at least we probably walk away from people that we work with and go, wow, that guy's so Dwight. Like,
yeah.
That's something
I wish we had a Dwight here.
I don't think it created the archetype, but it definitely like pointed it out, and I was like, this is a type of person.
Right.
And I was like, oh yeah, that's a type of person.
But he makes it,
and I want to prank that person.
Yeah.
Dwight is like so lovable. Like he's so creepy. Like he knows where Jan gets her camisoles and like all these things, but all he wants to do is like be the boss, and all he wants to do is be Michael's best friend, and he's like a loyal puppy.
He's incredibly loyal, yeah. That is true.
And, I mean, there's definitely times when he's horrible to everyone, but I can't hate Dwight. I want him to be happy.
Yeah.
I didn't want to watch The Farm. I'm kind of glad that spinoff didn't happen because it looked bad.
Yeah, that didn't sound great.
But...
No, and it's interesting, too. You really don't hate anyone on the show. At times, Angela is not exactly the best person. At times, Dwight is not exactly the best person. But like you said, them together, that pairing is kind of... cute or nice for some reason.
Yeah.
Every person on the show, you could validly dislike them, including Jim
Gabe.
And Pam.
I don't like Gabe.
Except, okay, Gabe.
Gabe is horrible.
Why so much hate for Gabe?
Gabe is like skeevy. He just makes me feel weird. I think sometimes he's kind of funny, but I don't know. Like, I definitely don't hate Toby like Michael hates Toby, but I had those same feels for Gabe.
Really?
He's like, get off the screen. He dated Aaron, which I probably had something to do with it.
Yeah, no, he didn't deserve Aaron.
Gabe and...
It didn't make any sense.
Who else did you not like? I feel like there'd be at least one other
person. I mean, there's side characters you didn't like.
Charles Minor.
Yeah. What was also Michael Scott's friend, played by David Koechner?
Todd Packer.
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of redeeming Packer qualities. I don't think a lot of us will like Packer. But
I saw him do comedy like down the road, and everyone was like, "Oh, do Anchorman quotes," and I'm just like, "Say something Todd Packer would say.
do anything, Packer." That's awesome. So I don't know. I mean, the show really taught us a lot about how to look for more in people, I think. If you want to try to draw any sort of lesson from the show, especially Michael Scott, the lead character is someone that if you jumped in for an episode here, an episode there, you might walk away disliking him, for sure. But if you actually watch the whole show, if you watch several seasons, I think there's no way that anyone listening to this podcast, go ahead and email me, ccollins@gmail.com, at wgnradio.com, if you don't like Michael Scott. And tell me why,
because
I just don't think it's possible.
Then give me their email.
And then you're going to debate and yell at them.
Yes.
We're going to egg their house.
What about Creed? How do we feel about Creed?
You're right. Creed is kind of creepy. But
he's a cool guy.
I'm not saying I don't like him. I'm just trying to think of like all
no,
the
who is,
characters.
Yeah, okay, let's go ahead. If you didn't like one character on The Office, who would it be? If you had to pick one.
I mean, I definitely don't like Gabe.
That is really at a Michael Scott level. You're right. You really just like him as much as he dislikes Toby.
And I love Michael's hatred for Toby like, so much.
I'm kind of sad that that's become like a bit that so many other shows have stolen. Like on Parks and Rec, it was Gary.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, they do that on Superstore.
Yeah. It's like, that's The Office's thing.
Who's hated on Superstore?
This character
I have seen a couple
Sandra,
episodes. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Where they like, she's asking if she can see like a sexual harassment video because she's like, "Oh, I'm being sexually harassed." And they're like, "Stop being such a word. I'm not going to say on your podcast, Sandra. We're not going to watch another video."
I actually have seen that episode. I actually know the episode you're talking about who is the kind of Dwight character?
The lady
Superstore. Yeah. What is her name? Something.
That's a good question.
Right. Because she's really in love with kind of
with
the main guy character, and they didn't do that in The Office. Dwight never fell for Pam, did he?
They had like a friendship that was really sweet.
It did. Yeah. They had
like when he got a concussion.
Oh yeah.
And he called
her
Pam.
Stop.
Yeah.
Pam.
See, that's when Dwight is like super endearing.
Right.
When Dwight goes to try to what was he even trying to do? Save Michael from the foot burn, and he gets a concussion and like throws a ball over the car and then keeps driving.
You're right. Now, even in those insane moments, like there's the episode where Dwight drives Michael out to the middle of nowhere because Michael has to learn how to live on his own for some reason. Why does he do that?
Or no. Yeah, that was Mike. Yeah. He does that to Michael and he drops Ryan in the middle of a beet field.
No.
Two separate episodes.
Yeah, yeah. there's an episode where
Michael wasn't invited on the retreat.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
Only Toby was. So Michael does his own retreat. And
by himself.
Dwight, watches him.
See, that episode, I think, is really a fun Dwight episode. But also, of course, Michael in, does it wind up being, 2 hours? Just devolves to completion.
he's, like, ripped up his whole suit and has it, tied around his head.
Yeah. No, those moments that show does really well. And actually, that also goes to the documentary aspect of the show, that all of a sudden you're watching a guy on his own in the wilderness and kind of the documentary perspective becomes pretty powerful and hilarious.
That's
in those episodes.
I really like that they kind of went a little bit, like, broke the fourth wall. They went a little meta at the end, and, like,
yeah,
they got to see the documentary, and I loved what they did with Andy at the end, how he, like, walked in the room, and he's so sad, and then everyone goes, I was sobbing.
Okay, go ahead. So you seem pretty tempted to talk about a lot of the final episode. So go ahead, you guys both, tell me a lot about how you feel the season or the show ended, and what you feel like that are good moments that you really enjoyed.
I feel like I should have watched it. I remember that Andy moment really stood out. And
vividly.
Then how everyone was saying, oh, Michael Scott's not going to come back. He's not coming back. And then he walked in when Dwight was about to get married and bawled there too.
Yeah.
The thing they did with Kelly and Ryan was weird, where like,
doesn't he like show up on a camel or something?
No, one of them has a baby. Like, oh, it's someone else's baby. Like, Ryan was dating a girl and she left a baby at his house or something. And
wow.
Then he's like, we can raise it together. And then they give it to someone.
Oh, yeah. They give it to Catherine Tate, her character.
She was great. Nellie.
Yeah. Nellie.
I wish Nellie would have been on the show a little bit sooner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That would have been. Well, I also wish that Ellie Kemper was just on the show the entire time. I wish that was just a person that existed the whole run of the show.
Oh, she was so cute.
Yeah. She is a cute person. Do you guys watch her new show?
Unbreakable.
Netflix, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I love that show.
Do you watch The Mindy Project?
No, I haven't seen a lot of The Mindy Project. I'm not a huge Mindy Kaling fan for some reason. She's fine. She's funny to me, but that character, even the one she plays in The Office, it may have gotten annoying. I know it's the point.
It did at the end, like her exit from the show where she's like, I'm moving to Miami. And it's like Miami, Ohio.
Right.
She gets a little bit overboard.
Yeah.
But there was even something great about Kelly and Ryan. Like,
there was.
Because I think we all know people like that.
Yep.
We've all been people like that.
Right. Where one guy is very, very whipped by the girl a little bit.
Well, sort of. And then they break up like every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really think, I don't know what it is about Mindy Kaling's character. Like, she's a great actress.
She and BJ Novak both are like two of my favorite writers.
I know.
And they wrote some of the best episodes. And that's when people talk about how the show declined in quality after Michael left. And I'm not sure it was after Michael left. I think it was after they left.
Oh, got it. After they stopped writing. And interesting. What did you guys think of Will Ferrell? I got two very big physical reactions in the studio.
Stupid. I don't know.
Dumb, stupid guy.
What did you think of Will Ferrell?
I don't know. I thought it was cool that a guy like that, an actor at that stage, did several episodes on the show. I don't know why. He did that other than maybe he's friends with, Steve Carell. But
he like got a concussion or something, right?
Oh,
like,
he went into a coma.
From dunking a basketball.
They're like, he's not dead. He's brain dead. It's different.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like they were really trying to make sure that we paid attention to the show after Michael Scott left. And so bring in Will Ferrell for a while.
I think I will say this about his character. He was on there for the perfect amount of time. I think his character easily could have overstayed his welcome.
Yeah,
but
you're right.
They got rid of him, Justin.
Yeah, and then, like you said, I guess it does start to jump kind of some of those sharks a little bit with just having Ed Helms take over the zaniness character and having the people kind of do... Yeah,
but
I don't know.
I remember I was... It was like my third year of school or something, and we were like, who's going to be the manager? And there was like a big break, and I remember like sitting in my chair at my apartment. I was all alone. And I'm like, who's going to be Andy? And then he popped up on the screen, and I like jumped out of my chair because I didn't like I didn't want Daryl to be the boss because that would be boring.
Yeah.
At the time, Andy was quirky in his own way.
Right.
Where he just like sang a lot. And
no, you're right. Andy, had he been actually the boss and he hadn't turned into just another Michael Scott, that would have been better.
Where he gets a tattoo on his butt to like reward everyone. That's like, that's strange to me.
Right. We're trying too hard now. So you guys then go ahead and tell me. It looks like you were about to say something. Do you want to?
Oh, I was going to say... I didn't really like Andy's ninth season arc. I feel like it was just this long, protracted like character assassination after they kind of tried to make him seem like more Michael Scotty in the sense that he's a more likable character throughout the entire eighth series. And then they're like, you know what? Never mind. He's a jerk now.
Yeah, he's the worst.
Yeah, he runs away from his girlfriend and gets on a boat and then has this weird thing with Stephen Colbert.
His computer falls off the boat.
Yeah.
No, yeah, you're right. I think it's some of the shows that I talk about on this podcast, they end too soon. There's shows where you say, okay, this show ended too soon, or or this show had no idea it was ending. And so all of a sudden they jam-packed all these plans they had for maybe two or three more seasons into six episodes. The Office.
Season 7 of the Gilmore Girls.
Exactly correct. Well, and actually the writers were gone at that point, so it was even worse. But the most interesting thing about The Office is that it seems like they were desperate to keep that show on as long as possible. So they actually, in front of our eyes, ran out of stuff to do, and the characters started to be kind of confusing, like you said, and morph one way, then have to be morphed a different way to maybe bring an audience back, because it was such a popular show that people weren't turning it off, even though it probably wasn't that good anymore.
I think that might have been the network executives, because the shows that were running with The Office on the like in its final seasons, the two big ones that come to my mind are Parks and Rec and Community, which have both had like quite publicly ratings problems throughout the course of their lives. So they're like, this show, people love it. We got to keep it going.
People are watching it.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near as good as Community toward the end.
Oh,
Community,
no.
Yeah,
no,
right.
Community is one of my favorite shows.
Oh, my God, mine too.
The Office is my favorite show ever that I've ever seen on TV. The Office and then Gilmore Girls, and then I could name like 100 more.
Wait, so that's your number one and number two?
Yeah.
Okay, so you just really like romantic comedy shows.
Yeah, but they're so, I mean, they're
are
so
you also
different.
A rom-com movie person?
No, I hate rom-com movies,
really?
Actually, yeah.
You don't have any feels for The Notebook?
I actually hated The Notebook.
The whole, really?
Like my friend and I.
I went with two female friends and they both cried on separate sides of me. One sleeve was tears
awkward.
Here. One sleeve, yeah, it was, that was awkward. I did not go to be a tissue. That was not my intention.
We made fun of it the whole entire time.
Wow.
Watched it. Like, I'm not into those like Nicholas Sparks movies.
No, right.
So
but that seems to make, because they both die at the end and everybody cries.
Oh, yeah, they die at the same time, which would like never happen.
No one signed up for Notebook spoilers. No one signed up for that coming into this. You're
Sorry,
right. I'm
guys.
A horrible person, and that's
Watch
another
a better
shot.
Movie.
Yeah, please. No, that's interesting. So there's no rom-com movie that you like, but you.
I mean,
really
I don't know.
Like...
I probably like them, like if I'm tired and it's on Netflix. But I would just rather watch Gilmore Girls or The Office.
Yeah,
and like...
because you like the elongated story, you don't want the little short. You don't believe in the romantic relationship that's from moment one, like Twilight. I don't know how they fall in love in the first 20 seconds of Twilight. Can we talk about that real quick? Have you both seen the Twilight movie?
Well, I read Twilight when I was in high
school. Smart man, I was forced to go to that too. You read the book
because I was like 14.
Rachel, you don't make any sense.
I
now.
Was like
you're claiming that you don't like
out.
Rom-com stuff, but you're reading Twilight.
I'm
20, oh my God, this book
I am
is so good.
Now,
this
so
book
this
is
a long
so great.
Time ago.
Okay.
But
and so then how'd you feel about the movie?
Twilight was horrible.
Yeah.
And I...
Is that how it happens in the book? Do they see each other in class and just fall immediately in love?
Yeah, she feels all like weird and tingly inside.
The way you feel about one of the characters in The Office.
I guess. Right. She's like, oh, his skin is so cold. And she's just like... at the time, I'm like, is that really how it works?
I don't know if this is going to make you uncomfortable, but I just discovered that Rachel really needs to do readings from Twilight on this podcast every once in a while.
Oh, I totally should.
Are you just Twilight Corner?
Ew.
At the end of every podcast, we will end with Rachel doing an excerpt of 2 minutes from Twilight.
That's when everyone just starts the drinking waterfall and like has to continue until I'm done.
Craig, why did you edit this to your podcast? We're all so drunk now.
This is horrible.
We're so drunk and starting to get good.
So, I'm curious because my interests are sort of reflected through all the different mediums in which I watch stuff. I do really like superheroes. For some reason, as a kid, I grew up on comic books and I'm in love with superheroes. Even a bad superhero movie, Batman and Superman is out, versus Superman is out this week. And its Rotten Tomato rating is actually the same as The Room. If you've seen that. So that's not good. That's not a good sign. But I'm going to go and I'm probably going to have a good time because it's Batman and Superman. And I like that on TV, on movies, pretty much anywhere. That's my jam. That's my thing. It sounds like for you, the taste kind of changes with the medium. So I don't know if that's something that you actually also find as well, that with, you know, TV shows, I like this, but with movies, I like this. Long pause. No, I mean, like, specifically, is there a genre that you think you tend to watch more in television form than any other form or in movie form?
I actually don't watch a lot of movies anymore.
Oh, whatever, because you're studying for, like, changing the world and stuff with your physics and
sure.
That
blah, blah.
Thing.
Let's go with that.
Actually, I can answer that.
No, go ahead, please, Rachel.
I really like movies about serial killers, cults, things like that. And then the TV shows, like Hannibal.
Oh, wait. You really like the How to Make a Murderer then, don't you?
Oh, actually, I didn't like Making a Murderer.
Making a Murder, yeah, I didn't. I don't even know the title of it.
I
watched the first episode and I was like, this is boring.
Because I really, I really loved Serial because I'm also obsessed with podcasts. Like,
yeah.
But nothing's ever, and people are like, oh, it's just like Serial. No, it's not.
It's not like, the same thing at all. Do you even listen to Serial? You don't even know.
No, I like Silence of the Lambs is one of my favorite guilty pleasure books.
Nice.
So I really like serial killer movies, anything about cults or kidnappings or anything. But then when I watch TV, the shows about that usually aren't as good.
No.
There's a new one coming out on Hulu that looks like it might be good.
Hulu and Netflix are doing amazing things.
Yeah.
The non-networks are doing some pretty incredible stuff.
Yeah. But
how do you feel about violence? I just did this motion. Both of you didn't see it. Yeah. So the other day I did a podcast about the first season of Game of Thrones, and Elif, who was my podcast interviewee, she couldn't watch the show because the violence was too grotesque. And I started to ask her about like the squirting blood situation, because I think that's the line for people, right? Is that if you see something violent and then there's also a lot of like blood and guts, that's where people are like, this is just gross. This is disgusting. Is that something that you can or can't handle?
Oh, I was saying something to Ben about Deadpool this morning.
Oh my God. Like, I love Deadpool.
I don't.
Yeah, what? Go now. Let's stop the podcast.
Spoiler alert.
Sorry,
no,
go ahead.
I don't really like violence, so I'll usually like turn away. But somehow Deadpool made it like it was okay. Like someone got stabbed through the eye, but then he said a funny joke. So
you were okay with that?
I was okay with that.
What is your Ryan Reynolds feels? Where are they at?
Oh, he's cute.
Okay. Yeah, he doesn't look real good in the movie. He's kind of messed up in the movie. But,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, that movie is hilarious.
That movie's really
and
funny.
And super violent.
It's
as
so violent. And then I was getting annoyed with the love story because I didn't really care about it. I'm like, oh, come on.
But that girl is someone that I'm in love with in real life. What is her? Morena Baccarin. I should know her name if I say I'm in love with her. She's in Gotham right now. She was on Firefly, and she's just the best human probably ever. I'm just going to say ever. I'm going to go with that. She's the prostitute on Firefly. Yeah, the fancy. The so fancy prostitute.
She's so fancy.
Oh, my God. If the prostitute existed like her. No, stop your sentence, Craig. No one drink to this.
No one drink to that.
No, you stop it, you people, damn it. I'm going to punch people if I'm actually around them now. If you drink to that. You all know
Come on, guys.
Like her too. Everyone in the room that's listening to this with me right now likes her too. And you also like her.
I also like her.
Do you?
I think she's great. Yeah.
Got it. So you guys, you would have like a thing, is what you're saying?
I mean, no, but I think she's beautiful. Right. Don't drink to that.
No, yeah. Everybody drink to that. Awkward lesbian jokes with your brother in the room. So anyway, back to The Office before we forget that is the topic of the conversation.
What do you think about Stanley?
Stanley. Yeah, no, I don't know. To me, a lot of the characters, they're so specific. Like, they have such different kind of, I guess, stereotypical things. And Stanley's a pretty good example of that, I think. Mm-hmm. That his character is more one-dimensional than some of the other characters on the show. He can be funny, but I don't think that he intrigued me as much as the people you probably get to know a little bit better than someone like Stanley. I don't know if that makes sense.
Do you guys remember there was the cold open where they're like, does Stanley have a mustache? Like,
I can't remember yet.
I couldn't remember. Like, they were saying that and I was like, oh my God. Wait, now I'm thinking he does have a mustache.
What do you guys think of Stanley?
He got weird.
Yeah.
Near the middle where he started like cheating on his wife, and then when they went to Florida and he was like drinking while driving and like hitting on ladies in bikinis. But I liked the Stanley Phyllis relationship a lot.
I think there must be something tempting to writers when you don't know a character as well as some of the other characters to make their life, when you find out about it, just really more dramatic. So like the cheating and all that kind of stuff, I think that was put in there because they said, how do we make this character a lot more than he's been? Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense or if that's what you think.
Go ahead.
I was listening to an interview with Dan Harmon where he's talking about writing for Community.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of describes a certain like subset of characters that he refers to as like the Muppets of Community. Like Magnitude, he just like shows up and goes
pop,
like, pop, pop,
pop.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then like Garrett, where it's like they're not like fleshed out characters.
Exactly.
They just like put them in scenes for jokes. Like, and I think some of the characters on The Office kind of inhabit that space.
They did, but then Stanley, as we're talking about, they tried to make him no longer inhabit that space, and that's where Stanley got confusing and weird.
But they couldn't do that with like Meredith or Creed, because that would have been so depressing.
Right.
Like Meredith was a single mom who was an alcoholic,
living in squalor,
leaving her door open, not going home to her kids. Like if they would have tried to flesh that out, that would have been horribly
sad. Yeah, that would have been a whole lot of crying.
Like,
yeah.
Does Creed have a house? What is Creed's real name? Why is he there?
Is he mentally insane?
Yeah. Well, yes, I would.
I would think that he has.
I would think
he's got problems.
I liked
No, it's interesting. That's an interesting point, and I like the way that that's kind of articulated by Dan Harmon, that there's these sort of puppet or Muppet characters. On radio shows, we actually call them puppets. If you do like a crazy voice and it's a little stupid character you do every once in a while, that's one of your puppets. So it's interesting to kind of think about it that way, and then an episode like, or a show like The Office, when does Stanley start getting fleshed out more? How many seasons in do you think that they start giving him more?
It's, I believe the first time you really see it is the Rumors episode, which is also one of my favorites, where they do the murder mystery.
Yeah.
Or no, or no, that's not the same. Is that the same one?
No.
Okay.
Rumors is the sixth season.
Rumors is the one where, yeah, okay. I love
you
the
guys
murder
know
mystery
the, You
one.
Guys know the episodes by their titles. I'm not going to know any of that.
Oh, it's the one where like, that's the one where
everybody has
they
a
find
secret.
Out he's cheating.
Oh, right.
And they
yeah,
find
yeah.
out, Pam, like, everyone's like, oh, Pam is pregnant. Stanley's cheating on his wife. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of other things that are happening. Mm-hmm. That might be the
So that's the sixth really. Season, though, is what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a little bit later.
I have a different answer.
Okay.
I think it happens.
Oh, your little friendship. Your little brother sister friendship.
Yeah. We're not related anymore.
My little, I was like, can I bring my little brother? And I was like, I should change that because he's a foot taller than me and he's 24.
My little brother outgrew me too. And you're a lady, so I feel like that's not as offensive, but I'm very mad at my brother still. I want him to take feet off of him, off himself.
Then
just lop a couple.
Off.
Yeah. So go ahead. What is your answer?
I think it's the stress relief episode where Dwight causes like a fake fire and then has a heart attack.
Save Bandit.
I think that's when we start thinking about him as more than like the cranky guy who's always doing crossword puzzles, or maybe even the Did I Stutter episode. I don't remember if that's before or after. Where like,
do you know
Stanley
what season that's in?
Michael.
Can you give me a season?
Can you give me
four.
A season?
Four.
Okay, mm-hmm. So that's after
the writer's strike.
So again, that's also after Jim and Pam become a thing, because really that is what made season 2 and 3. Intriguing is, you know, they were funny. All the episodes are very, very funny. But the thing that made it, you had to come back next week, is what's next for Jim and Pam.
What about Ryan's character arc? Ryan has an interesting, like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that way. And then he comes back because he goes away for a little while. And then he comes back because somehow he's got a corporate position. Remind me again what Ryan winds up.
He's a temp. And then at the end of the third
He
Second
gets,
or third season,
yeah,
he
gets Jan.
He and Michael both, it's the end of the third because everyone's interviewing for Jan's
job, yeah.
So Michael won't take it because, it's Jan's job and he loves her and her boob job. And so Ryan
that
gets
was such
that
a throwaway
job,
reference.
And
he does love her boob job. Sorry, go ahead.
And then at the end of the fourth season, they find out that Ryan's like, he's counting sales as more than once and he's like cooking the books, so then he gets fired. But then when Michael leaves to do the Michael Scott Paper Company, hires Ryan, and then insists that Ryan comes back, and David Wallace is like, you know, he like stole from the company,
right?
So he gets hired, and then he leaves again and gets hired.
Oh my
again.
God, the like, Michael Scott Paper Company. I forgot about those. I didn't see that for the binge. I love the Michael Scott Paper Company. How many episodes does that last? That's like a
three or four.
How interesting is that? And how wish fulfillment, like how much of that is a wish fulfillment probably to anyone watching who's like, if my boss or my job tried to screw me over, I'll just start a business doing the exact same thing in their basement. Like I'll just do the exact same thing where they do it, and that's totally fine.
WJN Radio.
I love WJN Radio.
I like.
Don't listen to this, bosses. I love you guys. WJN. The best.
Hi guys.
Hi guys. I love you. You're all amazing.
I need more
feelings. Bam. We're doing stuff.
There's a part when they're in the Michael Scott Paper Company. You know, they each have like a corner, and Michael's sitting in the corner, and he's like, "Well, Mom, P's just being a big B."
That was fun with that, Jay.
Yeah, that is amazing. So at some point during the conversation, I usually ask, and I think I totally tanked asking at the beginning of the show or beginning of this episode, although I'm sure you guys have answered it throughout, what was the reason you picked this show? The reason you picked it is because it's your favorite show on television, correct? Is that when I asked you to challenge me to something, or when you said you wanted to challenge me to something, The Office is picked because it's the best show
I
to
was
you ever.
Nervous that someone had already picked it
no.
and just didn't put it out yet.
No,
I was
yeah.
like, I got to jump on that. For me, it's just like a quintessential part of like a television viewing experience. Like, if I'm going to be friends with someone or I'm going to date someone, I'm always like casually bring up like, so do you watch
Have you seen The Office, though?
There's been like people who are like, if it's like a dude and he's like, yeah, I don't really like it. I hate Michael Scott. Like, let me tell you, things did not work out with him.
It's funny you say that because I actually have one too. I don't know if you have one, a relationship tester early on. When Harry Met Sally is a movie that I really, really like. I don't know if either of you have seen it.
Yeah.
I really like it for some reason. And so at some point in the relationship, and that's a weird rom-com movie that a man shouldn't admit to liking. So maybe my friends don't drink to this crap.
That's
don't
an
just
okay
stop.
Rom-com.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I support
yeah,
it.
Yeah, do it. Drink to the moments where Craig's weird. So that is something that I make sure that everybody sees if they haven't seen it or if they did see it. And if someone doesn't like them, I'm sorry, but that's yeah. not going
to
work out.
Like, mm-hmm. I at least need people to give it a chance.
Right.
Like, yeah. if someone was similar, like, well, I've seen a couple episodes, like, it was funny. I'm like, oh, well, you just have to kind of, if you watch more of them, then you know yeah. the characters better.
Uh-huh. And then, like, so when that doesn't work, you then accidentally have it on every time they come over for
yeah,
a while.
Yeah. Or I just, you know, I ghost them. I'm like, you're not worth my time.
Oh, ghosting. Let's talk about ghosting. No, sorry. Okay.
I've never actually done that.
No, it sounds like you've done that. So do you think that there's a relationship tester that you put out there?
Just recently, last like 2 or 3 years, have you seen the show Rick and Morty?
I have seen a little bit of Rick and Morty. Yeah.
That's my favorite show of all time. It fills the Futurama-shaped hole in my heart. And
okay.
then some.
Oh, well, the Futurama-shaped hole has to be large. Yeah. Yeah.
Like that and then the Community-shaped hole.
Wow. It's filling both holes.
Yeah, they're both written by Dan Harmon.
Wow, okay, that's cool. Yeah. And so Rick and Morty, though, that's also a cartoon.
Yeah.
So is it hard to then convince, yeah, see? See, that's what happened right there, and I was expecting that. Is it hard to convince the ladies to watch the cartoon shows?
No, not really.
You better
no?
not be watching cartoons with any ladies,
man. Oh, now it's getting awkward for both of them. I'm going to separate you two and have the end of this podcast individually. No, I find that it is to get the ladies to, I don't know if you're a video game player too, there's a couple things yeah. that still okay that are still not okay.
Oh, there's
on both
like
sides.
One, what was that cool video game I asked you about, Ben?
That one cool one was Super
there's
Mario
like a,
Brothers 2?
No, it's like Full Metal Alchemist. No. Oh. Metal Gear Rising.
Metal Gear.
Something where you
Metal
like,
Gear Solid 5.
That one is cool to watch. Because it's like it's like half movie, so you get some entertainment.
You know, Rachel, you could play the game.
I was beaten by a 5-year-old at Spyro. I cannot.
Wow, no, you cannot play the game. No, never mind. Have you played Mass Effect?
A little bit. I've played a little bit of the first one and then a little bit of the second one.
Well, a little bit of the first one is kind of boring. The second one, but it's also a movie. It's one of those games that there's movie aspects to it, so you could watch. Yeah. And they're actually...
Oh, it's good?
They're putting out a movie. They're putting out a movie based on the video game, mm-hmm. and I will be right there, first row.
Yeah, I'm super excited for the Warcraft movie.
Yeah, that also sounds amazing.
I played Destiny.
Nice! Destiny? You played Destiny?
Yeah.
I have a Destiny t-shirt.
I liked story mode, but then when it's just like, oh, let's go shoot each other for... Like, what are the...
No, that's
like
so boring.
Minutes?
I never did that part. Yeah, that's the worst.
For like 6 hours?
Right.
I'm not... I don't know. Right. I would rather watch 6 hours of...
Yeah, no, shooting with no point makes no sense. I've never played the zombie version of any video game and just shot all the zombies. That's something I never did. Not at all.
Ooh, what's that other one? It's called like not Badlands.
Borderlands.
Yeah.
Borderlands is fun because all the bad guys have funny names.
It's also the second one is great because the writing is so funny.
I feel like you just did the stereotypical girl in sports thing to video games.
Yeah.
Like, why do you like that sports team? I don't know. They all have cute jerseys. Why do you like this video game? They all have cute or funny names.
And then there's that cute little robot that, like, follows you around.
Claptrap.
Thank you. This is why I have him with me.
He gives you your nerd cred.
I'll text Ben, and I'll be like, hey, Ben, have you ever played this video game? Like, I played it today. I'll be like, good job.
Well, in nerd cred, I just referenced nerd cred. I hope that's not a word that offends you. I'm very proud of being a nerd. It's something that now in society is very okay. Mm-hmm. Nerds are, they're on the up and up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm excited
about
that. I
mean, my chosen profession gives me...
A little bit more nerd cred. Yeah. Yeah, you get quite a bit of nerd cred.
I mean, I'm
you're
just not
going
to pretend to be a nerd because I hate when girls are like, oh my God, I'm like such a geek. I'm such a nerd. Like, I have a Superman t-shirt and I've read a comic book.
Oh my God. It is amazing. You actually didn't read a comic book, though. You probably like read on the internet about the comic book. And now you're
or
talking about it.
Or just saw it.
If you've never seen an episode of Star Trek, I have some issues with you.
You're a Star Trek fan?
Next Generation, yeah.
Down it. I've never seen any Star Trek, actually. I've never seen it.
Go watch
Star
Trek.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You binge challenge.
You've been challenged all of Star Trek. Do it now.
All like 5 series.
Right.
Like, average of
there's
5
a bunch
seasons.
Of, what do you think of the movies?
The new ones?
Yeah.
I don't think they're in the spirit of Star Trek, but they're good, like, sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Like, I enjoy watching them. It's just, like, Star Trek is more about, like, ethics and like futurism and
it's not about big giant explosions and stuff.
No.
Okay, that's weird.
Oh, I have a thing that's about movies and brings it back to The Office.
Oh my God, you're gonna do amazing, Rachel. All right.
So
like you host stuff too.
There's a movie on Netflix, and tell me what it's called because I can't remember, and it's about child warriors in Africa.
I don't think any of us have seen this except you,
Rachel.
I know
what you're talking about. I don't remember the
name.
No,
pretend she's crazy.
It's a Netflix.
What?
It's a Maybe I made this up. It's
no,
going to sound like
I
made
premise.
It up. It's not called Out of Africa. It's
Out of Africa.
Okay, anyway, drink when the blonde doesn't know what she's talking about.
So there is a movie
There's
on
a
Netflix.
There's a movie that they made on
about...
Netflix, and it's really powerful, and it's about... Like,
was it the Netflix only, like the movie that was on Netflix first and then actually wound up in theaters and had like Oscar buzz or
maybe,
something?
I think it probably had Oscar buzz.
Okay.
So it was really powerful, and this kid's family dies and he gets kind of thrown into this child army. And then about three quarters of the way through the movie, I realized that the adult leader of this child army, who's obviously a horrible man, like that's not a spoiler,
yeah.
is Charles Minor.
Right.
And then I couldn't watch the movie the same way. And it almost made it easier to finish. But that's what I do is anyone I see from The Office, I see them as the person from The Office. Like, I drive the people in my life crazy quoting The Office every day. Like, that's why I picked it, because it's, like, so... It's so meshed in my life.
Yeah. No, that's true for any show that you really like, and that's actually come up on my podcast a lot of times. Once you like that show, and if a lot of the characters didn't do anything before it, everywhere you see them moving forward, you're like, yeah, there it is again. There's my friend. There's this person that I really care about.
And it's like some of The Office characters have bit parts in Arrested Development,
exactly.
which was before The Office, but I like watch Arrested Development. I'm like, oh, it's Phyllis.
Oh, anything Jan is in.
Yeah.
I don't even know her real name.
Yeah, I don't even know. No,
I see it. I'm like, oh, Jan. I'm like, she's acting normal. She's probably crazy.
You just give her backstory to be crazy, even if her character is never crazy?
Yeah, like she plays Trudy in Monk for a while.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. And you just think she's crazy. You just think she's insane.
Well, I mean, okay, maybe not in Monk, but I'm just like, oh, Jan. I'm like, oh, Jan's being so nice to Monk.
So the last question I ask usually to kind of cap the podcast is there something that you feel like we've left out? We talked about a lot more than just The Office, but The Office specifically, is there something that you think that maybe needs to be addressed in the show?
Ben, go first. So I can think.
I think kind of we might have overstated the overall cultural impact. Like,
Fair enough.
How you hear, like, old people talk about, like, in the 50s on, like, Wednesday night or whatever, you'd walk by houses and everyone would be sitting watching
iRobot. Yeah, that doesn't exist anymore, yeah.
Yeah, I think The Office is maybe the closest we've come to that in, like, the past, at least my lifetime. I'm 24, but...
You think we overstated or understated the culture impact?
Oh, understated. Yeah. Like, it's like, have you seen the new Muppet Show? Like, even that uses, like, the documentary interview style.
It does,
It's the Muppets.
No, you're right. Exactly. It's the way that they kind of changed and a way that a lot of people do kind of office-y things. That's true.
Yeah, it changed ensemble comedy.
Yeah, that's absolutely
correct.
And
made it more prevalent in... Yeah. On television, like especially like the single camera style.
Well, and it's interesting. I assume that some part of that was the temptation with reality TV, because the growth of reality TV and those kind of confessional moments, that's something that was happening for real and the most intriguing aspect of reality TV. So why would you not try to incorporate that into written comedy that's probably a lot better than reality TV?
Yeah.
Rachel, did you have an answer to the question?
I have a question.
Okay.
Answer to the question.
Whoa.
Ooh.
Yeah. Weird.
Everyone drink. What is your favorite Michael, like, moment or Michael quirk?
Oh, man. Well, that's two very different questions, actually.
Okay.
My favorite Michael
it's
moment or Michael
question.
Quirk. I do really like some of the stuff that we actually already talked about on the podcast, like Benihana Christmas when he has to mark one of the two people. That is very funny, and there's a lot of things like that. I don't know if it's necessarily a quirk for Michael, but just the way that he interacts with the confessional and the way that we get like so much information about Michael and just the stuff that he does, how insecure Michael seems to be and how he's really good at portraying that while also being a lot of things that we did. The reason I like Michael Scott is because of his insecurity and the fact that he's so aware of them. So that to me, I guess, well, it might not be a quirk, is the most fascinating aspect of his personality. Ben, did you have an answer to that?
Not really, no.
Rachel, do you have an answer to your own question?
It's too hard a question.
I was thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know. I like how sentimental Michael, is yeah. to an extreme point, like the second Dundies episode where he's trying to hand it over to Will Ferrell and he like really doesn't want to let go. Like, it's so endearing to see, like, he's the only one who cares about the Dundies, and
right.
everyone knows how important it is to him, so they play along, like, even when
no,
he
you're...
almost gets like Bushiest Beaver Award.
I don't know if we can say that on the podcast. That's okay.
Well, you know, because really, it's supposed to be Busiest Beaver.
Uh huh. We're going. Yep.
but it, I like.
No, it's actually both yeah. those things tied together. Your answer and my answer is the reason that people like Michael, because of his insecurities, he then does some things like you're talking about. The Dundies specifically, the reason that those exist is because not only does Michael need that reassurance himself, but he also assumes that everyone else needs it. He thinks yeah. that everyone is like him and everyone needs these awards. And while everyone else hates them, the Dundee episodes, though, are great.
So
yeah. The, yeah. And Dundies. Actually, there's a Jim Pam thing that happens after a Dundee that's also a really great Jim Pam moment.
Spoiler alert, they kiss.
Yeah, they do. They kiss.
And then
yeah,
Pam has a second drink. but the other thing that I thought was so sweet and like showed the maturity of Michael's character, I think partially because of his relationship with Holly,
mm-hmm.
when he's leaving, like when he lies and he leaves a day earlier than he says
yeah.
because he wants to just kind of like, he wants to leave on a normal day.
Yeah, he's a surprisingly considerate guy.
Yeah.
With all the other stuff that he does, he is very surprisingly considerate.
And he doesn't mean it. Like, he's so racist.
He's
yeah.
like, he's just innocent in his, yeah. like, he's just, well,
he's like a child,
right.
like a big child.
Exactly, yeah.
That's
yeah.
the best thing about Michael Scott.
And it's such a, it contrasts so well with, like, the second or third season episode where he's trying to have his birthday party when Kevin might have skin cancer.
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a good,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah. No, that's it. Well, and so on that note, thank you guys. I'm now really depressed. This has been You've Been Challenged. We've talked about The Office. Thank you, Rachel, for coming in, and thank you for bringing your brother into the studio. This has been really fun. Before I let you guys go, is there anything else that you want to mention? Just, you know, anything else you've got going on or anything else you want to promote, Rachel, your podcast, any of that stuff?
Yeah, just hit up Artistic License. I'm going to have the Gilmore Guys episode up probably by the time.
I'm really excited about that. How was it meeting the Gilmore Guys?
I didn't get to meet them. I talked to them on the phone.
Okay.
But then
how was it phone meeting the Gilmore Guys?
It was great. Like, Kevin talked a lot more than Demi did.
Okay.
But because Demi was getting ready for work and then driving to work. But they were great. Like, we talked less about Gilmore Girls and more about like the evolution of the podcasting world.
Yeah.
And, like, the art of fandom, because there's like people are crazy.
They have a passionate group of fans and followers, though.
Yes.
And they have a very successful podcast. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. Well,
so
awesome. Is there anything that you wanted to mention?
Physics.
Black holes.
I would like to plug physics.
I'm so excited. That's the way we're going to end this podcast. We have now plugged Artistic License and Physics. This is You've Been Challenged with Craig Collins. Come back next week. I have no idea what I'm talking about.